Member-supported Jazz 90.1 proudly welcomes you to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites. Call the show now at 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll-free 800-790-0415 or soundbites.org. Now, alongside Steve Ray and Dave Enright, here's Nick Francesco on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Good afternoon, Mr. and Mrs. American, all the chips in the PC. It is Saturday, the 27th day of February, Anno Domini 2021. And you, you lucky people, you're listening to Soundbites. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And it's 7 minutes after the hour. We're going to be bringing you news, views, things to choose, nothing to lose. Kick off your shoes. Don't get the blues. Here comes the news.
Ta-da.
And remember, you can give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. It's 966-5299. Toll-free, 1-800-790-0415. A security researcher is recommending against LastPass Password Manager after detailing 7 trackers found in the Android app. Although there is no suggestion that the trackers are transferring a user's actual passwords or usernames, their presence is bad practice for a security-critical app handling such sensitive information. Responding to the report, a spokesrobot from LastPass said the company gathers limited data about how LastPass is used to help it improve and optimize the product. Importantly, LastPass says that no sensitive personally identifiable user data or vault activity could be passed through these trackers, and users can opt out of the analytics in the privacy section of the advanced settings menu. LastPass's trackers include 4 from Google, which handle analytics and crash reporting, as well as 1 from a company called Segment, which reportedly gathers data for marketing teams. Researchers analyzed the data being transmitted and found they included information about the smartphone's make and model, as well as information about whether a user has biometric security enabled. Even if the data transmitted aren't personally identifiable, just integrating the third-party code in the first place introduces the potential for security vulnerabilities. Security researchers now recommend that if you use LastPass, change your password manager. There are products out there that do not permanently send data to third parties and record user behavior. LastPass isn't the only password manager to include trackers like this, but it appears to have more than many popular competitors. Free alternative Bitwarden has just 2, while RoboForm and Dashlane have 4, and 1Password has none. The report comes on, and NPass has 1. All of them except 1Password seem to have Google Analytics, but everybody's got Google Analytics because they're checking their own usage. Anyway, the report comes on the heels of LastPass's announcement to severely limit functionality in its free tier. While free users are currently able to store an unlimited number of passwords across devices without limitation, soon they'll have to pick 1 category of devices to view and manage their passwords on, mobile or computer, unless they want to pay for the service. The changes will come into effect on March 16th. We talked about that last week. Anyway, our poll of the week at soundbites.org. That is Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you, is what password manager do you use? The choices are 1Password, Bitwarden, Dashlane, NPass, LastPass, RoboForm, and other. Now, look, I know that I didn't put in the operating system's vault. I didn't put in browser's password manager. That's because I already had 7 things on there. So if you got those, put it in other and then leave a message on the forums. And you can easily get to the forums by going to our website at soundbites.org. That's Bites with a Y, Francis would like us to remind you. And scrolling down on the right under Fascinating Stuff, you'll find the forums. The 2nd forum down is the poll discussion. Currently, at least, the number 1 item under poll discussion is 27 Feb 21. What password manager do you use and why? So far, we've got 5 entries in there. And particularly if you picked other, which actually I think so far 12 of you did. We'd like to know what that other is. So if you would do that, that would be great. And, of course, you can join us here on the air at 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free at 1-800-790-0415.
Yeah, NPass for me has worked great in that, you know, I've got it set up on my phone and, you know, all my computers, and that, and it's just easy. You know, matter of fact, on the computers and my phone, I just stay logged into it. So if I go to any place, it remembers my passwords. So if I got to check into my banking or anything else, you know, it's not your, well, my banking, I think the password is like 36 characters long.
Yeah.
Because that's the limit. I would have done longer. Right. I mean, some of them I got that are 70 characters long. Am I going to remember it? Hell no.
Hell no.
But, and it's a mixture of uppercase, lowercase, punctuation, you know, hyphens and everything else. So, which will make it just about virtually impossible for me to remember all those. I don't have to. I only got to remember the one main password to get into NPass.
That's right.
And setting them up. I had another website where I was signing up for. So they said, oh, well, we'll recommend a password. I go, nope. I put it into NPass, told it to generate a password, and popped it in there.
So the way you do it.
A lot easier and handier, and I love it.
And it remembers them all for you. And because it's on every device.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to worry about any of that. The only time the only time I ever screwed that up was our Disney Plus password.
Mm.
I set it in NPass and then realized I had to go left, 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 right, right, down, down, up, up to actually get it into the television.
Until your TV gets a keyboard on it.
Yeah, right, right, right. But I have that now. I have a USB keyboard and it's on there now, but... At that time, I was like, this is the stupidest thing. What was I thinking?
Typing all those in, yeah.
What's a little interesting about that is it's a password vault, so you know any tracker is bad. But you go to a generic website, you're going to get dozens, if not hundreds, of trackers.
Right.
So seven isn't that bad, yeah. Comparatively.
Isn't that bad?
Yeah. But no, it's definitely the way to go. Oh, I did hear somebody ask me, we got into a conversation during lunch, you know, during the lunchroom, recommendations for backup software. I actually had somebody wondering what we recommend for backup software. They want to, you know, they've got, I was very impressed, especially with this person. I didn't think, but, oh, he's already backing up to OneDrive. And he's also got Google Drive, and he's backing stuff up there. And I talked him into going to Google Sheets and all that other stuff. But he's got some other stuff that he'd like to back up. But what program would we recommend?
Well,
do we have it on our list?
Yeah, we do. We have, if you go to asknick.com/backup.php. asknick.com/backup.php.
Okay.
If you're looking for a cloud solution that you never have to think about, I always recommend pCloud. Of course, I am an affiliate for that. As for various operating systems,
one of the nice things about pCloud is they have a lifetime one payment.
Right, you buy it once, you're done.
Yeah, most of the cloud services are by the month. They don't have a one-time forever payment.
Right.
And is that limited to one computer, or if you got multiple computers in the house?
They have a family
plan
as well.
Okay, so that's good. That's good to know. I mean, because everybody's data, you know, whether it's yours or your wife's or some other kids that are doing a thesis paper or something else, and they forget to back it up, and it's already backing up.
Right. And they have two plans, the 500 gig plan and the 2 terabyte plan. So you ought to be able to find something in there that suits you.
Yeah, thank you.
And it's like I said, they do have a monthly plan. They do have a yearly plan. But the lifetime plan is, I guess, unless you're 110 already, is probably a pretty good deal. But in addition to that, on the backup page, there's sections for Windows, Mac, Linux, Android, and iOS. So... you can find lots of stuff that's available. And we don't recommend just one product because everybody's circumstance is different.
Mm-hmm.
But we do offer, there's free, there's paid, There's what they're good for and easy and hard and blah 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 blah.
Well, that's even the same with the when we recommend, say, like AVG or Super Anti-Spoiler or Malware Bytes, all these others. You know, they are there's free versions, just like the Revo. There's right. a free version, but if you go for the paid version, you're going to get other features. And automatic updates and all that. So there are benefits to it. Sure, yeah, you can get it free. And like I say, depending on your circumstances, hey, each of everybody's different. So that's why, you know, we've got a variety and you can pick and choose what fits your budget.
That's exactly right.
And paying for data recovery when your hard drive fails could be thousands and thousands of dollars. So, you know, spending $50 now or $100 now is a really good idea.
Well, that's why I was telling Nick. Well, with the Raspberry Pi and the drive, I think I spent two and a quarter for a Raspberry Pi 4, a 2 terabyte hard drive, and now I've got it set up with, it's running Windows Pro. There's videos on how to set it up. It's very easy to do. I put Windows Pro on Windows 10 Professional on this Raspberry Pi, hooked up the 2 terabyte drive. Now I've got that replacing my, I think it's got to be at least 16 years plus server.
Yeah.
That I know is running.
Your server is older than my car.
You ready for this? I looked at the hard drive size. Guess how big the hard drive is?
I want to say 500 meg.
Less than that.
256?
250.
Wow.
250 megabit. But that was the big thing then.
Yep.
So now I got a 2 terabyte, and I'm just going to slowly retire that drive server because it's older, it's slower.
Sure.
So, you know, now I've got it going to backing up to there and my Buffalo drive, which is a 1 terabyte hard drive. So I've now got to go into two places for the little bit of data that I actually save on my computer. That's right. Tons because my documents, photos, and everything else are saved up to the cloud.
Right.
I don't do anything more in Word or spreadsheets or anything else, and nobody knows the difference. Like I was telling you before, I did up some slide presentations. I told Google Slides, save it as Microsoft. So I sent them off to the individual. He didn't know what I created them in.
Sure, they don't care. Yep. They don't know because it's openable in anything.
Yeah.
So that's easy enough.
And if you have several computers in your house, which a lot of people do these days, you know, your spouse, you know, desktop, laptop, it's nice to have a network backup drive that all of your computers can back up onto so that you don't have to put a single drive on each computer. And especially laptops that tend to work its way around the house and you forget to plug your backup drive in.
That's right.
Having a network backup drive is pretty handy for that.
Well, that's why the Pi is so slick. I mean, it's about as big as a deck of cards.
Yep.
And it set it on, you know, the hard drive I set off to the side of it. And that sits up over on a shelf down in my basement next to the switch. It's plugged in and I don't have to worry about it. I can get into it if I want to because
right.
I've got an HDMI cable. I can plug it in if need be, but otherwise, for the most part.
I've got mine set up with my old spinning hard drive when I replaced the spinning drives with SSD cards in my main desktop. I put that the 2 terabyte spinning drive on the Raspberry Pi, and it does my backup now. And I remote access into it, and I can do whatever I want, or I can just have it. You know, backup, it backs up automatically, of course.
Mm-hmm.
But that stuff is not difficult to do. And as it says on our backup page, you do not have enough backups.
Mm-hmm.
You simply do not.
Well, it'll only, what I usually tell folks, what it's going to take is for a system to crash on you. And then all of a sudden reality clicks in that, oh, shoot. I got to get to those photos or that document because I need it. And the drive is dead. And you can't because you didn't take the time to back it up.
What really breaks my heart is, you know, I've got pictures of my parents who passed.
Yeah.
Or, you know, my kids when they were babies or whatever it is. And how do I get at them? Well,
Mm-mm.
Now is not the time to think of that.
Like Steve says, you send it off to one of these recovery services. You're going to pay through the nose on that. And there is, again, no definitely guaranteed promise. They'll do their best to recover what you failed to do before.
Right. It's back up. It is so easy to set up, particularly if you use something like pCloud. It's a one-time cost. It's a one-time setup.
What was the cost on pCloud, if you don't mind me asking?
$175 for half a terabyte, $300 for 2 terabytes. Lifetime.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous. It's ridiculously cheap.
It is.
And so... I mean,
what it would cost you to recover.
That's exactly right.
That's what you got to just compare it to the recovery cost.
Stick at least 10 on the end of that.
And have it, you know, so it automatically does it without you thinking.
Right.
You know, in the evenings, don't turn your computer off. Just turn the monitor off and let it do it at night if you say you don't have the time.
Yeah, but pCloud does it automatically at the moment. So if you save a document, it immediately goes to the cloud.
The first backup you run when you first install it will take forever. So, you know, start that in the afternoon and let it go all night.
Right, right. Because you're now backing up everything that's never been backed up before. That's going to take time.
Yeah, backs up changes. And when there's nothing there, everything is a change.
That's exactly right. And so that's what makes it so fast. So if I open up a 50-page document, which I've done, and I change one page, which I've done, and save it, the upload goes like that because it's only
that one document
uploading the changes of that one document, and then it does magic at the other end. So that it doesn't take much time or you know, even on a fairly slow connection, after that first upload, right, after the very first time, every other backup is going to be super fast.
Yeah.
So. We recommend something along those lines. If you don't use pCloud, use something else. And like I said, I have an affiliate link there. I get a couple of pennies every time somebody buys it, and that doesn't hurt me.
No,
whether you do that or not.
And then after you buy pCloud, set up your own affiliate link and get all your friends to join.
No, use my affiliate link. No.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Yeah. Forget I said that.
I know. It's in your way. Get over
it.
I did notice in the YouTube thing that I'm suffering from the new Mal. You've heard of hat hair? I'm suffering from mask beard.
I think your mask is pushing up on it too.
Yeah.
Swinging around behind you.
Yeah, I could. Or I could just take it off. One of the things that I did
in our Lexan cubbies that we have here.
Right. That's caught. One of the things that I do now is I may have mentioned this before. I am just a print monkey for my wife, for my 3D printer, and I am making these now for her. They're little connectors for the. Masks, and you put a couple of those on, and you're on your way. All right, to the phones. Our first caller is Mike from Batavia, New York. Hi, Mike. What's up?
Hi there. Well, I followed your directions from last week to buy a switch, okay? And the one that I bought has 8 ports. 4 of them are PoE ports, okay? And the advertisement... promises that you can use these as regular ports so that it negotiates with the device. And I just wanted to make sure before I plug anything of value into this that that's correct, that this is not, you know, and that's what they say, but there actually is a problem, something. And
right.
I just want to see with you guys, with the combined experience, I figured you should know, you know, and you would have a better scope on this than I would.
Right. PoE stands for Power Over Ethernet. And what it does...
It's really amazing.
Yeah, really is an amazing thing. And basically what it does is what it says on the box. It provides power over Ethernet.
Normally, when you plug a device into Ethernet, you need two cords, the Ethernet cord and the power cord.
Right.
And if you don't have a power outlet where you're trying to plug in your thing, then that can be a problem.
Right. And basically, the way it's supposed to work is that you have really essentially two cables in there. One does the power connection, and one does the
network
electricity, and one does the network.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I was reading this here. The problem is, in order to use it that way, you have to have a device at the other end that accepts PoE.
Yeah. So on your switch, you need to have a power on to Ethernet box that puts power into your switch, or you have a switch that supports power over Ethernet directly.
Right. And in your case, what you want to know is if you can plug a non-PoE device into a PoE place. And the answer is yes.
That device will probably need to have its own power cord separately then.
Right. Yeah. But the idea here is that if you were to look at the inside of that PoE thing, you would see many more connectors than a normal Ethernet port has. Those extra ones are power, and if the thing you plug in is not a PoE cable, is a regular Ethernet cable, it'll just block them, and it doesn't connect them to anything.
Yeah, well, what my big concern is plugging something in and having it fried.
Right. And yeah, in fact, that should not happen.
Yeah, no, it won't even start.
What'll happen is that if you use a non-PoE cable, a regular Ethernet cable with the four little connectors, it will not transmit the electricity because it will not be touching those extra connectors.
Oh, okay. Okay, I get you. Okay.
So, yeah, there you go.
Okay, that makes sense. Okay, well, thank you. I just wanted to verify because, you plug something into it, and even though black and white, in the advertising, it's saying, no, it negotiates, and it's safe to put something in it, and you sit there and go, okay. Okay, well, thanks. Thanks, guys.
Yeah, enjoy. But that's definitely not a problem. You can easily connect a non-PoE device to a PoE port, and it simply it doesn't connect to the power. That you need extra pins, and it doesn't have them.
It's very handy with Internet of Things, especially security cameras. So you only need to run one Ethernet wire to where you're going, and don't have to have power there as well.
Right.
Especially because a lot of times you're going to put your cameras in the ceiling, and there may not be an outlet in the ceiling.
Right. Exactly right. PoE is a great idea, and they did it right, so you don't have to worry about that. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 29 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Sound Bites on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
It's America's longest-running computer show. Back to more Sound Bites with Nick, Dave, and Steve. Next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 34 minutes after the hour, we are Sound Bites, and we have Tom from Brighton, New York on the line. What's up, Tom?
Yeah, quick follow-up question on your talk about the P-Cloud. So it sounds like a very useful utility, but the thing is, who is backing it up? Who's behind it? What company is it? And what if they run into a financial problem at some point in the future? What would happen to the backups at that point?
Right. That is, of course, always a concern. P-Cloud is known to be a profitable company. They're making money, so they're probably around for at least a little while. They are a company called P-Cloud. That's who they are. And it's been around since 2013. They've got over 10 million users. So it does, it, and they are, like I said, they are profitable. So it does look like they'll be around for a while. But of course, that's true of any, you know, that concern is true of anybody you back up to. That's why you want to have more than one backup.
Exactly. Yeah.
And that's why, you know, that's why I say on my site, you don't have enough backups. pCloud is a great one. It's easy. It's convenient. It's simple. It's fast. And it's always there, but it shouldn't be your only one. You want to have at least two backups, and three is better, and four is better, and five is better, and, you know, on and on and on. So having a local backup, having a cloud backup, having a near side backup, as they call it, which is you back it up and take that drive off your machine.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, doing, if you're going to be serious about it, you do all those things. But for most people who have no backup, something like pCloud is a good one backup. At least it's better than no backup.
Okay, good advice. Thanks a lot.
Yep, thanks.
And as you said, that is true of any cloud service, although sometimes you think the bigger companies like Google and Microsoft and Apple are going to stay in that business for longer, but you never know, especially Google
especially
likes
Google.
To cancel things. And did you hear about the latest on the Google chopping block?
No.
Google Stadia.
Oh, yeah, I did hear that.
They announced like a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
They shut down their studios, and they're stopping their development. We haven't completely heard if they're going to keep the platform open for other developers to keep using. Maybe they decided they can't compete with Microsoft xCloud, which is Microsoft's version of a cloud gaming service.
Well, I don't think they're shutting down the service. They shut down their gaming studio.
But how long are they going to support other people running on their platform that they're not supporting?
Yeah, for Microsoft.
Yeah, there's no money in it for them.
Yeah.
Right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Ed from Ithaca, New York. Hi, Ed. What's up?
Hi, guys. I have a question about an iPod and getting an older program for an older iPod. So it's an iPod 4. It uses iOS 6. And I want to download a particular program that will speed up the vary the speed on playback. And I can't find things in the iPhone store or whatever it's called, the Apple store,
yeah,
or something that old. And I'm wondering if there's any kind of archive of older programs.
Generally, no, because they have to come from the App Store. So it's up to the developers to keep old versions around and keep compatibility with old versions.
Uh-huh.
Many times when you try to download the new version, if the developer has left the old version available, it will download that version itself.
Oh, okay. So I can give that a try.
But it's up to each individual developer to do that.
Uh-huh. Okay. Okay, so that's the best thing to try then, I guess.
Yeah.
Okay.
Although the new iPod Touch 7th Gen is fully supported by the latest software. So pass your 4th Gen down and get a new 7th Gen.
Well, I like what I have, and I'll see what I can do. Okay, well, thank you so much.
Yep.
Thanks.
Bye.
I found my original 60 gig
classic
iPod 1. iPod Classic, what do you call it?
Well, the iPod 1 had 5 gigs.
Oh, mine was, I think, it might have been 5, but I thought it was 60.
Yeah, that were later models.
I could be
with
wrong.
Bigger drives
I found that the other day. I didn't plug it in or anything. I found it.
I've seen that now and then where people will find their old iPod and then look at what music was on it. And God, I used to like that music.
Yeah, right.
Here's the greatest songs of 20 years ago.
Well, most of my music is classical.
Yeah.
So as somebody was saying, it's what I tend to listen to are 1800s cover bands.
There was an episode of Futurama, which takes place 1,000 years in the future,
right.
Where our hero is thrust into the future, And he's sitting in his living room listening to an 80s retro station, 1980s retro station. And another character, Leela, comes in and says, Fry, you can't sit here moping all day listening to classical music. Because it was written 1,000 years ago. That's classical,
true.
Right?
It is. Yes, you're right. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Rich from Irondequoit, New York. Hiya, Rich. What's up?
Good afternoon, guys. I guess I have two questions here, and hopefully they're easy ones to answer. My first one is, using Chrome's remote desktop type feature, is that a good thing, bad thing? Like if I wanted to get into my computer at home from work and utilizing that program to do it?
You can. And it's no better or worse than any other remote access program.
Okay.
None of them are as secure as we'd all like them to be.
Well, Microsoft RDP is horribly insecure.
Horribly insecure. But most of them use the same protocol. So, but yes, it's as good as any other. Let's put it that way.
And it comes built into Chrome, so it's a lot cheaper than the other ones.
Right.
Yeah, so if I wanted to use it at home, that'd be one thing. That'd probably be okay. But doing it across the internet or across town wouldn't be a good idea.
Well,
make sure you're on an encrypted network. Well, you know, encrypted Wi-Fi when you do that, so you have at least that layer of encryption.
Okay.
Right. It is Chrome Remote Desktop is considered to be secure and safe because all of the remote sessions are encrypted over a secure SSL connection using AES, if that means anything to you, which means your data are protected while you remotely access your computer. Can it be hacked? Of course, anything can, but it's as secure as any remote desktop and more secure than some.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. My second question then would be I have on my router a USB connection, which would allow me, I would assume, to connect a external hard drive to do backing up to.
That's good usually idea, what they're for.
Idea. What's that?
That's usually what they're for, yes.
And yeah, then check to see if it's a blue one or a black connector.
USB 2 or USB 3.
Yeah, because if it's blue, it's USB 3, and you can get like a terabyte or 2 terabyte SSD hard drive, which has no moving parts.
Well, the Ethernet is usually the slowest link on that. In that scenario.
Right, yeah.
But then you'd have to go into your router management console and turn on file sharing, create a SharePoint on that drive, and then set up users that are allowed to connect to that drive.
Okay.
And then on each of your remote computers, you log into that remote drive. You basically now have a file server on your network. Log into that remote drive and tell your backup software to back up to that drive.
Now, that's no access on the outside of that. I mean, just, we'll say, within my network, in my home, so I wouldn't have to be worried about somebody getting into that.
Right,
right. But you want to make sure that the router doesn't have port forwarding on and allowing access on the WAN port, because it can be turned on if you want it to be.
Okay. I see what you're saying. Okay, so no access from the LAN port would mean it would just be my network within my house.
Right.
It would be your intra.
Right. Just on your LAN. You don't want it on the wide network.
Yeah. Right.
Okay.
It's on your intranet, not your internet.
Yep.
Okay, I see what you're saying. Okay. That sounds like a good idea. I wanted to, that might give me a, I don't want to use it as a cloud backup, but even just a backup in my house as a secondary backup.
Perfect.
There you go.
We were talking about earlier.
Yeah, that would be good.
Winner, winner.
Yeah. All right, well, great information again. Keep it up, and we'll talk to you later.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Of course, we're not actually free. We would love to have everybody become a member of the station, and that's easy enough to do. You can go to jazz901.org, hit the Donate Now button, scroll down till you see the soundbite stuff, and become a member of the station. We are free in the sense that we're not charging you for this stuff. But we are not free because somebody somewhere has to pay to keep us on the air, and that's you. Notice how I just snuck that in?
Yeah.
You're welcome, Rob. All right. Back to the phones. Our next caller is Will from Hampton, Virginia. How are things in Hampton, Will?
Peachy.
There you go.
Not too bad. How are things up in Rochester?
Nice. It's actually kind of warm today. We're in the 40s. And so so for us, that's
Fahrenheit.
It's a heat wave. Yeah, Fahrenheit. 40s yeah. Fahrenheit. And yeah, so we're pretty happy.
Mr. Dave Enright, I know that you are a Raspberry Pi enthusiast, and so I wanted to ask you, one, how did you get involved? Two, are you focused on the hardware, the software, or is it a little bit of both? And three, lastly, can you talk about the value you've gotten out of it? And I'll hang up and take my answer over the air.
Okay.
All right. Thanks, Will.
Well, stick, if you want to stick around, we, in case you have any other questions, because stick around for a couple minutes, because this is a new topic. And I kind of got, Nick and I both kind of got involved into it. And we're doing, we started with the Raspberry Pi 3s. And there was different programs that you could play around with and services in that that you could play with the Raspberry Pi 3. And, you know, got into that and played around with it. You could connect and see other TV, movie programs and everything else. And there was all, you could put all different types of operating systems. Well, since the 4 came out, the 4 is really taking over like gangbusters. One, I would definitely recommend a 4 with a fan. Some
with
folks tried a fan. They you can buy the kits now. You can buy just the Raspberry Pi 4 board with just the heat sinks. What I always recommend is get the whole kit. That way you got a little fan. There's a muffin fan that's blowing down on it because it is, you know, a real nice processor. I like to go with the 8 gig gigabyte memory. And then SD cards, the micro SD cards, I usually use 128. You want to get the faster ones. There's a number of them out there that there's one guy, I forget, you could YouTube. He's done a lot with putting like Windows on Raspberry Pi 4s. And he did a test on all the different SD micro SD cards and what's the fastest ones. So, you know, I did a lot of research on that and played around with it. And right now, like I said, just this past month, I wound up getting a Raspberry Pi 4 with the 8 gig of memory on it, put it in its own little case, and hooked up a, because it was on special again at Amazon, was a 2 terabyte hard drive. Now I have this little box. It's no bigger than a pack of a deck of cards with a hard drive on it. As my file server, it had cost me all of a little over $200. And I've got running Windows 10 Pro on it. And there's plenty of videos out there that'll show you how to do it. It's very easy to set up. Mm-hmm. You know, you watch the videos and you can pause them at times and time, but they walk you through it. And it is so cool. I mean, I can run videos on it. As a matter of fact, I'm going to set up this other program. It's called an SSDR play, and it scans all your different ham channels and, say, even the NOTA channel for NOAA and broadcasting and everything else. You can scan the whole spectrum of music to ham to Air Force and Navy and, you know, all the different bands that they might be broadcasting on by simply putting out a wire on an antenna for an antenna.
So essentially, this sounds like the electronics slash computer hobbyist kit for the millennium.
Yeah, yeah. It's like I said, we were saying back at Christmas time. You know, you want a gift? Get a Raspberry Pi. You can have literally hours of fun. There are so many. There are folks that wind up getting a Raspberry Pi that control their whole home. They do, you know, set it up to control the lights, the temperature, and everything else, and they got it that they can control from their phone, and they just log into it, and they're doing. There are tons of projects out there now that are coming out for the Raspberry Pi, and I was talking to this one gentleman because the Raspberry Pi was developed over in England.
Oh,
and the gentleman that runs this one talk group on Sunday nights that I'm part of was saying, evidently. He was telling us just this past Sunday, hold on to your socks, because within the next 3 to 4 months, Raspberry Pi is going to be making some major announcements and advancements into their boards and everything else. And it's like
one thing you should know. I also got into the Raspberry Pi many years ago because I was using it in a module of a class I was teaching, and I fell in love. They're great. They're little boards. They're not expensive.
Yeah.
You can do dang near anything with it. I'm a big Linux guy. So I immediately gravitated toward Linux on it. It's fast. It's inexpensive. And if you're, you know, interested in learning Linux, it's also a great way to do that. But one thing you should know is that right now Raspberry Pi also has a product called the Raspberry Pi 400.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's That's the high end. What?
That's pretty cool.
It's very cool.
Yeah.
It's the high-end Raspberry Pi. That's a 1.8 gigahertz, 64-bit quad-core processor, 4 gigs of RAM, 16-gig SD card. And it comes with a mouse, an HDMI cable. And by the way, did I mention that the whole thing is housed inside a keyboard?
It's a VIC-20.
Really? Yeah.
So all it's essentially a VIC-20.
For those of you that are 40-year-old computers?
Right.
This guy that I was talking about has a demonstration on the 400.
Yeah, they're great little boxes.
And it's so cool. Yeah, the 400. It doesn't have the, because he was setting up Windows, it didn't have the audio. So what he did was picked up a little sound key
module.
Fob module for $8.
Yep. And it comes with an HDMI. So all you're actually missing is the monitor. And that whole setup is $100 at a place called Canakit.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Canakit.
That's where I get mine from.
That's where I get all my stuff from. But I, you know, like I said, I originally was using it in a class, and I thought, yeah, this isn't going to be much. I don't know how we're going to use this in any way. And then, man, there's nothing you can't do with it. I have currently a Raspberry Pi 3 that's doing nothing but folding at home, which is, looking for solutions to viruses and problems that humans have. I've got a Raspberry 4 that is my home server, and it's you can do quite literally anything with a Raspberry Pi 4 that you can with dang near any other.
And it's no big deal to, you know, if you mess something up, reformat it and start again.
Yeah, exactly.
You know, you're only talking an SD card.
If you're looking for a toy, particularly in these lockdown times,
it's a lot of fun.
$100 for a Raspberry Pi 400 gives you everything you need except a monitor.
That's all right. All right. Well,
and it has an HDMI port, so you just plug it in your television.
It comes with two.
HDMI cable.
Yeah.
It comes with two. There's two ports.
Yeah, there's two ports, but you only get one cable.
Yeah. But it's no big deal to get an extra cable.
You're right.
Well, ma'am, no, I take that back. I think the new Canakit comes with two HDMI cables.
No, it says one. I'm on the site.
Oh, mine just came with two.
Oh, good for you. That's
I lucked out that. I'm not going to say that.
You don't say anything.
Yeah, I guess I.
What? But at any rate, that's something to take a look at.
Yeah, you got any other questions?
No, you guys were the ones that got me started on Linux and Ubuntu, so I'm eternally grateful for that. And now I'm on the verge of getting started on this as well, too. So this should be a very fascinating journey for me as well.
Oh, it's just a lot of fun, like I say. It's no big deal if you mess it up. You know, you can reburn an image and start again, you know, and just redo it.
So you're saying we've ruined you forever, and now we're going to ruin you again.
You could say that.
All right, thanks, Will, and good luck. Let us know how you get along with that Raspberry Pi, which one you get and how it works out.
Yeah, let us know which way you go, because like I said, Nick would say, if you want to go a few bucks more, the 400 is
$100. It's not much at all.
Yeah, I mean, you know, for that little bit more, you're getting the keyboard, the mouse, and everything else. The only other things that, like you were saying, you might want to do is hook it up to your TV. Of course, you could do it to that. But one of the other things the gentleman in these videos that I was watching is saying on the 400, you might want to also get an expansion USB port. In other words, you plug this expander into it and get they come with like four USB 3s and four USB 2 ports.
Mm-hmm.
And that's handy to have, you know, if you're hooking up other things to it.
Because the Raspberry Pi 400 has one USB 2 and two USB 3 built in.
Right.
So nominally, the keyboard goes into USB 2 because you don't need speed on your keyboard.
Right. And the other thing that the kit comes with is the power supply. Some of the lower end kits don't come with a power supply.
Yeah, I get mine with the can. It comes with the kit. I love it because it also has that. I get it with the little extra on-off switch.
Yeah, you can get it with an on-off switch. Yeah. I never turned mine off, so I didn't bother.
It was handy. just to have.
Yep. Anyway, that's just a thing to think about and
get in trouble with.
Particularly if you're just starting out, that 400 kit means you have everything but a monitor and you're on your way.
Well, I knew this was going to be an interesting discussion, and I again thank you guys for the wealth of information.
That's what we're here for.
Mm-hmm.
Is it? Mm-hmm. I've always wondered.
Thanks, guys.
All right. Keep us informed, please.
Have fun.
All right.
Take care. Stay safe.
Yeah. Sadly, you've reached two fanatics for the Raspberry Pi, and consequently, we'll talk your ear off all day on the thing.
Oh, yeah.
I've been afraid to unpack mine because I'm too busy as it is.
I just realized that I have a third Raspberry Pi. It would be my second three. And it's been sitting in the stuff that I brought home from RIT X 100 years ago. And it's just sitting there. And I need to unpack that. I need to plug it in. I need to get it doing something.
Mm-hmm.
It's because it's doing nothing now. That's not right.
That's what I could do. Oh, because I've got a Raspberry Pi 3 that's hooked up to my TV that I haven't used in over a year. I could take that down and put Linux on it and play with Linux on.
Yep.
Hmm.
Yep. You can put Plex on it and make it a media server. There's just a zillion different things you can do.
I mean,
do with
since
these
I cut the cord, you know, and now even with Sling, they give us, they threw in for free 50 hours of recording. So you can select a program
right. And
have it record it each week and up to 50 hours. And it's all free. And it's like, since I got that, it's not.
Right. You're good. But there's all kinds of things you can do with a Raspberry Pi, and they're. Ludicrously inexpensive and just plenty of fun.
And it's so simple to do. I mean, you might sit there and say, YouTube. I can't say it enough. There is so many videos out there on the Raspberry Pi for doing different projects. Whether you're going to set it up for Windows, Linux, Raspbian, you just type it in. And it's out there, and they're for the most part, very good videos, because like us, you know, there people are having fun experimenting with it and playing around to get it to do different things.
Right. You'll love it. You really will. All right. That music tells us you wasted an entire hour of your life with this nonsense, but don't go away. We're just going to take a short break, but we'll be back with a whole nother hour of the longest running computer show in the known universe. That's Soundbites with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. Don't forget to vote in the poll. We've only got 34 votes so far, and so far Other is way in the lead, but everything got at least one, so that's kind of nice. But we will be back. It is 59 minutes after the hour. And you are listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe. Soundbites right here on the Truly Great. And as we said earlier, truly grateful to you because we can continue with your generous support to be member-supported. Jazz 90.1. We will see you. Take that little bio break, and we'll see you on the other side.
Computer talk you can understand. More Soundbites is next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
WGMC Greece Rochester, a public service of the Greece Central School District, Jazz 90.1.
On Twitter at 901 Jazz. Welcome back to America's longest-running computer show, Soundbites, on member-supported Jazz 90.1. Get online now. Call 966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299. Toll free 800-790-0415. Or submit your question by email at soundbites.org. Once again, here's Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And at 6 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. And we have Doug from SOTUS, New York on the line. Hiya, Doug. What's up?
Hey, what's going on, fellas? I got a question about overclocking. I got this computer. I got it back on its feet. It's an older computer. It's Athlon 6, 4 times 2, dual core processor, 4200 plus 2. My question is about overclocking. Do you recommend I overclock this? If so, I have no clue how to do it. I know it's something in the BIOS, but I downloaded the motherboard manual, and it says right here in this thing, this motherboard is designed to support overclocking. However, please make sure your components are able to tolerate such, you know, settings and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Right. Well, the blah, blah, blah is actually the important part.
And I would say no. You got two things going against you. One, overclocking is stressing the board as it is. Second, and the biggest point, is this is an older board. It's not brand new.
It's an MSI board. It's an MSI.
Yeah, but how old is it?
I don't know the year.
10-1 odds, yeah. So if it isn't brand new, again, you're putting, you know, if this was in another machine being used and everything else, by trying to overclock that, you're going to put so much stress on the already used motherboard.
Uh-huh.
That I would not recommend it.
And a lot depends on how much you overclock it. If it's running at 2.0 gigahertz now, you might be able to go to 2.01.
Or even 2.1.
Or even 2.1, yeah. So it's overclocking doesn't really buy you much. It was really popular in the gaming world, so that, you know, if you're getting 50 frames per second, you could get 55 frames per second.
Right.
So basically you're saying as a common user, I shouldn't even touch it.
No. Nope.
Yeah, no, it's not going to gain you anything, and all you're going to do is kill the motherboard sooner.
All right. And I appreciate that. Now, I got one more question, if you wouldn't mind me throwing it in. I got Ubuntu 20.04 or whatever, trying to get a DVD burner, that program Brazero, I can't seem to get because it won't show up in the App Store. What is your recommendation for copying software?
There are a couple of programs. You've already got the burner. What you want now is the software.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Okay, so for 2004, what's the one I use? I can see it in front of me, and
But you can't think of the name.
I can't think of the name.
Brain fart.
Brazero should work. You should be able to download it. I have used Brazero, and I really like it. If you can't find that one in the store, are you burning DVDs or?
Just regular CDs. You know, making backup copies of my own personal CDs.
Right. You could also try one called XFBurn.
XFBurn.
X right. is in xylophone.
X-ray.
X-ray.
All right.
Xylophone starts with a Z.
But either one of those would work. But you should find Brazero.
The problem is, I tried to download it. And it just keeps coming up with errors. I go in the terminal and I do all these steps, and it's just like,
What's the error?
Well, it can't connect to the network, and it suggests something else, and it's like a weird error, you know.
Well, you have no problem installing other software.
No, no problem at all, no.
All right, well, do me a favor and try it again, because it might have been a glitch somewhere in the network itself, okay. And it might have been fixed by now if it was like a day or so ago.
I just think because of this up-to-date version of Ubuntu, like, because I was rocking the 18, a while back, and I had no problem with that. And it was so great. I used to put it in a CD, like one of my personal CDs, and it said, well, do you want to make a copy of this? And I was like, it was a really good program, and yep. I still can't seem to get it on there. But I'm going to keep trying. That's yep. all I'm going to say. You know,
I could swear that I'm using Brucero at home because that was my favorite as well. But give it a try again.
All right, guys. Well, you guys have a nice weekend, okay?
You too. Thanks.
All right.
Yeah, it's as with anything else, you're grabbing stuff off the network, and so consequently, sometimes you're not gonna see things that you're not gonna get a good connection to some stuff. So, I understand that. I do.
I started a new YouTube stream because the old one it said stream excellent, but had no video on it.
Oh, nice.
So I started it again. So if people who were watching, you may need to go back in and rejoin the new stream. We're up to 251 subscribers now.
That's very nice. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Jerry from, I think it's Villages, Florida.
Oh, the Villages. Yeah,
the Villages.
We're going to be by there in a couple of weeks.
Nice. So what's up, Jerry?
I hope to see you down there. I had a question. I just bought a new laptop, Windows 10, to replace my old Windows 7, which I haven't used too much. But I paid for the Microsoft Office for Home and Student, and it was loaded on there. I guess maybe I paid for the Microsoft Word on the old one before. I don't remember. But now when I go in there, you have to set up an account now to do that?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Microsoft Word?
Yeah, the Microsoft Office comes in two versions, a subscription where you pay the $100 a year forever. And you must, well, in either way, you must have a Microsoft account. The other option is $150 one-time payment for Microsoft Office, the home version, Word, Excel, and PowerPoint. Some people will buy that just because they're used to the Microsoft products.
His question is about the...
Yeah, you must have a Microsoft account to log into prove that your subscription exists. Also, if you buy the one-time payment, that's where it stores your license key, so that if you ever reinstall Office in a few years, you don't have to find your box with the license key in it, because no one ever can.
Yeah. I did buy the $150 version of it with the license key. I have that.
Yeah. But, you do need to create a Microsoft account for that.
Mm-hmm. I guess even though I paid for it, I have to create an account for it, I guess, too.
Yes.
So you can register that that license code.
Yeah, another question, quick question. Can I use that on another device at all, or is it just restricted to the one laptop?
One laptop.
Yeah.
There are some, what's the word I want? Non-concurrent use. So you can use it on a desktop and a laptop as long as you don't use them at the same time.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, thank you very much. I wasn't aware of this. It was something new to me, so I appreciate the information.
Yep.
Yeah, no problem.
Thanks.
Yeah, most software has started going into this licensing agreement for the last 4 or 5 years. A lot of software is going license only. Adobe was probably one of the first major companies to start doing that. And so far, Microsoft is still allowing you to purchase, a one-time purchase. One of the advantages of the subscription fee is that you get the new version for free every time, which is, I guess, kind of handy. But they only come out with a new version every 4 or 5 years. The current Microsoft Office is 2019, so it's probably going to be 2023, 2024 before a new version comes.
Yeah, right.
Microsoft always touts up the sharing abilities, that with the online subscription, you can share your documents so much easier with other people, which is great in an office environment, but you don't really need that at the home.
Right. Right. Okay, back to the phones. Our next caller is James from Rochester, New York. Hi, James. What's up?
Oh, hello. I have a question for you. On one particular website, when I play their videos, it's like a stock site. All of a sudden, the videos, I get an echo on the sound, and it's it the controls on that particular site don't work properly, but on my computer, everything else is fine. I have Windows 7. Any idea what that is?
That's clearly an issue with their website, and there's nothing you can do about it. If everything else works fine,
yes,
then it's that site. And you can talk to them about it, but honestly, don't tell them you're using Windows 7 because they'll just ignore you.
Yeah, I sent them a note, and they said, try going to Internet Options, Browsing History, Settings, and Update when visiting the web page. Matter of fact, I'm playing it right now. It's like all double echo talk. It's like nothing working properly, the controls, the stop, and everything.
Right. I don't, you know, it may work. It could be a Windows 7 issue. They may be using a much newer version of the playing software, and that doesn't work with old Windows 7.
Because Windows 7 is ancient.
Yeah, nobody's backlogging.
Nobody supports it anymore.
Mm-hmm. This just happened all of a sudden, but this is a very modern website that
right.
you actually pay to use. And it wouldn't surprise me if they're constantly putting modern, updated things.
Right.
Yep.
And they're assuming now that they're assuming nobody's using Windows 7 anymore. And that could be, the facts of life. It's just not going to work with 7. Sorry.
Yeah, Windows 10 came out 5 years ago, and they gave you that long to switch.
Yeah, right.
Yeah. All right.
Unfortunately.
Sorry.
Like I said, everything else on all the other websites, it's just that particular one.
What browser are you using?
Chrome.
You could try Firefox or Edge just to see if it works any differently.
No, but I think I will. That's a good idea.
Try that at least, but no promises.
What would you recommend, Firefox or Edge or either?
Firefox.
The new Edge is Chromium, so it's a lot better than it
try
was.
Try Firefox.
Okay, thank you so much.
Yep. Bye-bye. I mean, if Chrome doesn't work, it's unlikely that Chromium will.
Yeah, that's a good point.
So, yeah. I get that. I can't see the... the chat. Oh, well. No chat for me. All right,
No one has said anything yet.
Right, okay, well, that's okay then, because I can't see it
anyway.
Maybe
that's why I can't see it.
our next caller is Jim from Rochester, New York. Hi, Jim, what's up?
Hi, guys. Hey, just FYI, I just got tuned into 90.1. I've been listening for a month now and enjoyed it, and now I'm even happier because I'm hearing a computer guy talking, and I've got a computer question.
Excellent.
I am not a computer person, but in my years, I have accumulated like 4 laptops and a couple desktops from my family, and we're not using them. They're stored on a shelf in my basement, and I like to get rid of them, but I'm concerned about the history on it, you know, my vital information, whatever, and I want to know how I can make sure anything about us is off of it before I recycle it.
D-Ban.
D-Ban is the thing you want.
Derek's Boot and Nuke. It's an ISO that you download and then write to a flash drive or CD drive. It will, you boot that drive, it will zero out and erase your computer, nuke the data on that computer so no one can get into it.
Gotcha. So the laptops and the desktops that I have, I need to plug them in, turn them on, and then pop in this drive and do it.
Right. Yep. So what you really do is you start at dban.org, D as in David, B as in boy, A-N as in Nancy, dban.org. Download the program, burn it to a DVD or a
flash drive.
Flash drive, yep.
And then go turn on your other computer, boot from that flash drive, and that will let you wipe your machine.
Gotcha. So that I got that. Now, let's say I have one. I guess gosh, when they first came out. What if I don't know the password or won't turn on? Is there anything physically I can do to it to take something out of it?
Well, yes. If you can't turn it on, it's probably a dead machine to begin with.
Right.
And so if it's a laptop and it's old enough, you may be lucky that it has a door on the back where you'll be able to access the hard drive and pull it out.
Gotcha.
If not, you'll have to take the whole back off.
Gotcha. Yeah, I'm sorry. I'm driving, and I didn't realize that I don't have any specifics on what they actually are.
Right.
But taking the hard drive out of them would be the physical thing to do.
Right.
And then when I take those hard drives out of them, what can I do with the hard drives to be sure, other than going on a cruise and dumping them off out in sea?
Sledgehammer works good.
Sledgehammer works. You can use them if are you
drill press.
do you shoot skeet?
Yeah.
That'll work.
10-pound sludge does wonders.
Does wonders. Or you can just take a chisel and drive it right through the drive.
Yeah.
I've got those skill sets to do those kind of damaging things.
A 10-penny nail does great wonders, too.
Yeah.
Gotcha. So I think because I'm not a computer guy, I think what I've heard from you is try to identify where the hard drive is on it, get that out of there, and just take my sledgehammer and just drive it into the ground and then recycle it, throw it in the garbage.
Yeah, well, no, don't throw it in the garbage. There's a place called Maven Technologies that takes old hardware.
Okay, very
There's
good.
Also e-waste in Victor.
And e-waste in Victor, right.
Okay, very good. Well, thanks, guys. I appreciate it very much.
Enjoy.
All right.
And welcome to the club.
Thank you very much. Yeah, I love the station.
Tell your friends.
Will do. Thank you very much.
And, of course, become a member at jazz901.org.
Because that time will be creeping up soon.
That's right. For you new listeners, we are a member-supported station. And that means that twice a year we come to you.
Asking for your help and donations to keep us on the air so we can provide the information that we do week after week.
Here's a news item I should read. Oh, by the way, don't forget, tomorrow night, for those of you who are interested, we are hosting an online hour through the nice folks at Mastermind Lounge. You go there at soundbites.org/lounge at 9 o'clock on Sunday nights. There'll be a link to the video chat, and we'll take any questions you have, or we'll just chit-chat around. And before we go back to the phones, I will read this news item. Some advanced users are reporting an overuse of the SSD from writing and reading data on the newly released Macs with M1, Apple's first computer chip based on ARM architecture. The issue could eventually affect the lifespan of internal SSD used in M1 Macs, not to mention the machine itself. As noted by users on Twitter and also in the Linus Tech Tips forums, macOS indicates that the internal SSD of M1 Macs has registered extremely high drive writes over relatively short time. One user points out that in some extreme cases, the SSD has already consumed about 13% of the maximum warrantable total bytes written, or TBW. When you hit the maximum warranted TBW, your warranty expires no matter how old the drive is. Since SSDs are based on chips rather than mechanical parts, they all have a predetermined lifespan based on how much they're used for writing and reading data. The more you write data to an SSD, the faster it will show bad behavior such as slowness or even data corruption. As the internal storage of M1 Macs are soldered to the logic board, users will have to replace the entire computer if affected by an SSD defect. With a regular use, this can take up to 10 years to take effect, but today's report suggests that the lifespan of the M1 Mac internal SSD can be reduced to as little as 2 years due to macOS behavior. Unfortunately, the reasons behind this problem are still unknown. They could be either the M1 chip constantly using the Mac's internal storage for memory swap, which is basically using the SSD as virtual RAM, or just another bug found in macOS Big Sur. Apple hasn't yet commented on this issue, but hopefully the company will fix it with a future macOS update. So how's your M1 holding up? Give us a call, 585-966-JAZZ. That's 966-5299, toll-free 1-800-790-0415.
There was a story a couple of years ago about web browsers and their cache savings. Cache was set too big, and it was wearing out SSDs really fast. You know, people don't realize that even though there's no moving parts, they still wear out.
They still wear out pretty quickly. So those of you with M1s, pay attention. Take a look at the health of your drives and see how they're doing.
I'm looking at the articles they have about it, and they show these statistics, but they don't show the command that got that statistic. I'd kind of like to see what my SSD is looking like, too.
Right, right. All right, back to the phones. We have James from Rochester back on the line. What's up, James?
Yes, I installed the Firefox, and I just want to use it for that one website. But my question is, it says here, enter your email by proceeding first time. You need to sign in every time installation of the Firefox. Do I have to log everything in? I just want to use it for this one thing.
Firefox, you know, like Google and Apple, they have their own accounts where you can synchronize your stuff between browsers on different computers. You can ignore that if you don't want to bother doing that.
Yeah, I just want to use it if it works on this one website. I don't want to switch everything over.
Yeah, no, you don't have to do that. You can skip all those.
So it says here also, looks like you've reinstalled Firefox. Do you want us to clean it up with a fresh new experience?
Say yes.
So at some point you were using Firefox and all your old settings and bookmarks are still
outdated.
Years ago, I loaded it. Never used it, though.
So say yes.
To refresh on that?
Yeah, yes. Just say yes. Say you want to refresh it.
Okay, but don't. And then
don't bother signing in. You can skip all that stuff. There should be a skip button somewhere.
Okay, well, thank you so much.
Yep, good luck.
Okay.
Yeah, it's everybody wants all your information now. And that's
for only the most altruistic reasons.
Yeah, exactly.
We just want to sync your bookmarks across your devices.
Let me tell you what I've discovered for places that insist that you log in to do anything. But I know I'm never going to go there again. There is a web service. There's a mail service called Mailinator. And what? Okay. and you can put in any email address you want because they're all wide open email addresses. So don't use it for anything except that one time, you know, send me a code thing because anybody can log into anybody's email and see anything. But I use it all the time for one shots.
Yeah.
All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Roger from Rochester, New York. What's up, Roger?
Hi, guys. I have heard a rumor that a couple of you guys might be ham radio operators. A guy trying to talk me into buying a thing called ClearNode, which looks like a Raspberry Pi, all configured to do All-Star on 2 and 432.
Mm-hmm.
And I wondered if you had any comments to say before I do. It's about $300 for it. I think it's a Raspberry Pi 3, but I'm not positive. I've been thinking about doing it because it does allow All-Star and without having a special radio to do digital.
Well, the All-Star node, what it'll do is it will, that comes with a Raspberry Pi and usually a radio attached to it. Now, that's just, then you've got to have a separate radio to talk to that radio.
Right.
So, yeah, you'd need another handheld, whether you get, say, like a cheap Bofang radio.
I got all that.
Yeah, and you can set up your channels within All-Star through Supermon. There's, again, some videos on how to set that all up so you can have the dashboard on your computer and you can put in the different groups into your favorites. And log into those. There's different nets that go on. There's a number of Rochester nets that go on during the week and everything else. Or yeah, you can get into the various talk groups.
Okay. I just wondered if by buying this ClearNode, it's already pre-set up for everything. You tell it, and they set it up. If it still leave me a Raspberry Pi that I could play other things with, that's really what I was...
Yeah.
My thought was.
Yeah. What it'll come with is, like I say, the Raspberry Pi, if it's all in one box, you're going to see the radio in there, a regular Bofang radio with the Raspberry Pi and then a little soundboard. And that gets connected to your network. It'll get an address. And then you can either, you know, even on your desktop, you know, you can log into that node number and see the dashboard.
Yeah, stuff you could do yourself if you wanted to.
Yeah.
It might be cheaper.
It's kind of nice that someone has packaged it all together.
Right.
If you're more a ham person than a computer person.
Well, it's easier because...
Like he only wants about $50 for it, so it's probably worth the...
Oh, heck yeah, because like I say...
They're going for $300 online.
Just wiring the radio, taking the radio, the handheld apart and wiring up the wires to go from that to the soundboard, and then from the soundboard back to the Raspberry Pi, it's a pain in the butt. I bought mine as a kit, and then I just built the Raspberry Pi.
Okay. Hi, thank you. I was just curious about doing it. I may go ahead and go get it. Thank you very much for your time, sir.
Yeah, there you go. Have fun.
DMR is another easy one, too, Dennis, to get into.
Which one is it?
Another one is you can set up a Raspberry Pi for DMR. And DMR, you can do different modes. DMR, you can do P25. You can also connect to All-Star and go into certain rooms.
Okay, because, well, the thing I don't want to end up doing is I don't want to buy ICOM or Yaesu digital radios to do the other ones, you know, D-Link or those.
Yep.
I can't see no reason to do that.
Yeah.
The All-Star.
Yeah, the All-Star D-Star.
Good way around it.
Yep. So I should do.
Thanks.
You're talking at the same time.
Right. All right, thanks. We're going to take a quick break. Back in just a couple of minutes with Dave Enright, Steve Ray, me, Nick Francesco, and you. It's 32 minutes after the hour. You're listening to the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Soundbites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Online 24 hours a day, 7 days a week at soundbites.org. More with Nick Francesco, Dave Enright, and Steve Ray next on member-supported Jazz 90.1.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Nick Francesco.
I'm Dave Enright.
And I'm Steve Ray.
And the 38 minutes after the hour, we are Soundbites. Before we go anywhere else, I should mention that my friend Brian suggested, since we have this picture of Rob Linton sitting in the middle of our YouTube video, do any of you remember Clutch Cargo?
Yes.
With the moving mouths.
Yeah.
We should be able to do that to him.
Do that.
Have him talk.
Signed up and listened to Soundbites. And had the lips. Yeah, that'd be cute.
That works for me. I'll tell you that right now.
Max Headroom.
Yeah.
Sure. All right. We have Ed from Henrietta, New York on the line. What's up, Ed?
Just comment. Clutch Cargo, man, you guys are going way back.
We're old.
Oh, man, that's great. I thought I'd forgot about that. I got a question. I need your advice on something. I'm not a gamer, and I don't have a lot of time to sit in front of a computer or whatever to read about, you know, what somebody thinks on Facebook or that EDC. it's just personal requirements and needs, blah, blah, blah. I have a smart Android smartphone, which is, you know, does pretty good yeoman duty, but it's kind of limited in certain areas. And I didn't know what to buy in terms of a desktop, a laptop, or a Chromebook, because I don't need to take my, you know, work with me or go someplace and get into my files, et cetera. So
right.
what's your suggestion on something like that?
All right, let's start with desktop versus laptop. A desktop is going to give you either the same power for less money or more power for the same money.
Than a laptop.
Because you pay a premium to carry it around.
Okay.
So if you're never going to carry it around, then a desktop is a better alternative.
Okay.
If you're never going to carry it around.
Mm-hmm.
But if you might carry it around once in a while, then a laptop is good. Now, in terms of Chromebook versus Windows, Chromebooks and Chrome boxes, by the way, Chrome box is basically a desktop. That you plug into an external monitor just the way you would a regular desktop. So that's just another option. The big thing is what do you do on the machine? And you don't have to tell me everything. But if you can do, well, that was dumb. If you can do everything you normally do in the browser, if you've got Chrome, the Chrome browser installed, and you can do everything in the Chrome browser without resorting to a Windows program, then you can absolutely use a Chromebook. If you have to resort to a Windows program, then you have to check to see if there's an equivalent in the Chromebook. But I will say that 99% of all people can use Chromebooks without a problem. And they do run Linux apps if you want to do that, but they certainly run Chrome Android apps. So some things. So, for example, I have a friend who has a Chromebox, and he wants to do scanning from his printer. Well, Chrome itself doesn't do that, although it's on the list of things to add. So what he uses is an Android app that does the scanning for him. So
you, what about, say for example, spreadsheets or something like that?
Oh, there's a program. Okay, so in terms of word processing spreadsheets and presentations, there is a thing called Google Docs, which if you are if you have a Gmail account, a Google account, you have access to Google Docs, and it's at docs.google.com.
And accounts are free to get if
you don't.
And
accounts are free. And so you have access through that to word processing, spreadsheets, and presentation program like PowerPoint.
In Chromebook.
In the Chromebook, and on your desktop right now. So if you were to open up the Chrome browser.
On your existing machine.
On your existing machine and go to docs.google.com. You will see that, that stuff is there. It is your, it's called your Google Drive.
All you got to do is basically, if you open up the Chrome browser, up in the upper right-hand corner, you're going to see this little thing that looks like a cube of dots. If you click on that, that brings down the menu, and you're going to see a docs file there and a sheets. And sheets is to do spreadsheets. If you were to click on it, it will open up your Google Sheets, and you can create a spreadsheet.
And there's calendars and contacts,
maps,
and shopping and maps, finance. There's all sorts of Google apps that services Google provides for free, which is neat.
Yeah, and it stores it up there and it's free. So you don't have to worry about backing it up or anything else, you know, other than it's already backed up there.
I did not know that. That's terrific. And that's in the Chromebook, correct?
Right, that's online. That's through any browser.
Any browser, Windows machine or whatever.
So you can get to it with their idea. So there are some limitations to Google Suite. Google Docs can only collect 1 million characters per document.
Ooh.
Right. A Google Sheet can only have 5 million cells, 40,000 new rows at a time.
Yeah.
Can only have 18,278 columns and only 200 sheets per workbook.
So if you can live within those limitations.
Yeah, I would say that's, in a Chromebook, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was thinking about a tablet, but that's unwieldy, and so I thought I wanted to get something a little bit more, and not a tablet. You know, you can't stick that in your pocket.
Yep.
So
small tablets in big pockets.
Yeah. I would suggest that right now today, right after you hang up from us, you can go to docs.google.com on your web browser and check it all out even before you decide to buy a Chromebook.
It's free.
Docs.google.com. That's great. Free. Now you're talking. It's good.
Yeah, I mean, there you go. And the thing of it is I'd create, say, documents, you know, whether it's a doc or a spreadsheet or even a slide, and I can save it as a Word document or an Excel spreadsheet, send it to that person, and they don't even know the difference.
That's right.
And they're done. Well, I'm glad I called. You learn something every day, as they say.
There you go. Okay. Have fun.
All right, take care. Thanks a lot.
Yep. And one of the things I absolutely love is that Google Docs lets you do voice typing.
Yep.
So I can turn on voice typing and just talk to my computer and it works.
Kate, where are you calling from?
That's a pretty good deal.
You just have to remember to turn it off so it stops.
Yeah, right. Right.
You remember that episode of Star Trek where she was so excited about the typewriter that would type everything she said, and she was so scared and confused about how is it doing that and how futuristic that was in 1969?
Yeah, right.
Assignment Earth. And it was Terry Garr. It was someone who became a famous actress after that.
Exactly. I will say that it doesn't. Google typing doesn't work quite like the tablet that Adama used in Battlestar Galactica. It doesn't automatically insert commas and periods and start new paragraphs. You have to do that yourself as if you were dictating to a secretary. Hello, period. Thank you for talking to me, comma, Mr. Smith, period. So you have to do that stuff. But other than that, it certainly works. All right, back to the phones. Our next caller is Kat from Rochester, New York. Hiya, Kat. What's up?
Need to copy Thunderbird to a new computer.
Uh-huh.
And I found an article Steve Ray had put on your site. Do I just follow those steps?
Okay.
Pretty much.
Okay, so it sounds pretty easy.
Yeah, so if you have saved mail on the local computer, then you would need to copy it to the new computer. If you created your folders on the server, then when you just log into Thunderbird on the new computer, they'll show up on the new computer automatically.
No, I need to copy from the old computer.
Yep. Yeah, that should work. If you follow Steve's old post, that should work just fine. Be careful. Read it through thoroughly before you start.
We'll see if there's an updated version of it.
And then, he's checking that now. But read it through thoroughly before you start. Make sure you understand every step. And then make sure you do every step on the new computer.
Got it.
You should be fine.
Great. Thanks.
Yep. Thank you. It's not. And strike out there, Kat. It's not. And give it a try. It's not. None of the stuff is that hard.
Yeah.
But you need to, like I said, strike out on your own and give it a try.
Well, the one thing folks have to remember, sorry to interrupt, but, if you're watching a YouTube video, one thing folks have to remember, and I don't care what YouTube video you're watching, there is a pause button.
Yep.
Hit the pause button once in a while and take notes. You can pause it, take some notes, and start it over again. You can even back it up again if they didn't say it quite clearly. Take your time and, play it.
If you hit the left arrow, you'll go back 5 seconds.
Yep. So just take the time to pause it every so often and write some notes. I found it very helpful just doing that once in a while.
Every once in a while, I find myself hitting that backspace once or twice, that back arrow.
Just go back 10 seconds and,
There's a feature on the Apple TV called What Did He Say? It jumps back 20 seconds and turns on closed captioning.
Nice.
That's perfect.
Yeah.
That's perfect.
On that Thunderbird article from Mozilla over on the right-hand side, you pick what version of Thunderbird and what OS you're using, and it gives you the instructions for that specific version.
Nice.
Which is handy.
Very, very nice.
And one of the things that I'd like to recommend is if you make new folders to store your mail on, make them on the server, which then makes it much easier to move to a new computer, and you can see all of your mail on your other devices, your phone, your tablet, your computers. Had a customer recently, Windows 7.
Oh, yeah.
Running Outlook Express.
Wowie.
Oh.
And he got a new Mac, and I want to get all my mail over. How the heck do you convert from 15-year-old Outlook Express.
Yeah, really?
Oh, he's got a Google account. Drag all the mail up to Google. And then on the Mac, Google sucks it all down. So I showed him how to do a few mailboxes. He had, several dozen mailboxes and several thousand messages. But
I would say his day is going to be planned.
Yeah. So, did you finish it yet, Bruce?
Yeah. That's one thing I loved. When I had to set up this other computer for the Windows 10, it had to sync. So it synced it to one of my other email addresses. And my other tabs and all that, bookmarks and all that, weren't there. So, So all I had to do was go to my other main account, export the bookmarks, import them to the other email address, and rearrange them the way I wanted it. Now, no matter whether I log in as one account or the other, they both look the same.
Yep.
As far as the tabs that I can, you know, that I've bookmarked stuff in, they all are the same. And I only had to do it on one. I didn't have to go from one computer to the other, the other, the other. It's all tied to that one account. So it makes life so much simpler.
Right. So basically, what Dave is saying is when you have certain programs like Chrome, the Chrome browser, you can elect to save all of your settings in your Google Drive.
Yep.
And if you do that, any other machine that you log into with your Google account, you will get all of those same bookmarks back down instantly, as fast as your connection exists. The same is true of many email programs. So as Steve was alluding to, for example, on my Thunderbird, all of my accounts keep all of their data on the server. So when I bought my new hard drives, my SSD drives, and set up all my programs, I just had to say, okay, Thunderbird, I want this account. Here's the username and password. I want this account. Here's the username and password. I want this account. Here's the username and password. Everything showed up because it's all existing in the cloud, and it just instantly showed up. Now, what Kat's been doing, apparently, is saving all of her data on her computer, which is fine, except that, of course, if her computer dies or, as she did, goes to a new computer, she has to transfer that stuff by hand. What many of you will find is that a lot of programs have an import and export feature, usually under file or something along that
line. Oftentimes, the very first time you launch it, it will ask if you want to import from another program.
Right. But you'll have to often export from that other program in order to do that. And so what you do is you go in and you say export, and it'll say, what do you want to export? And you pick all your folders and whatevers, and you can export them. That's also not necessarily a bad thing to do once in a while. So you've got a copy, which you then store somewhere else.
Yeah, that's why it was so easy compared to the old days when I just recently, as a matter of fact, this last weekend, I wound up wiping out this one machine, Windows 10, because some of the updates messed it up and kept fudging up on me. So I said, the heck with it. I said, nope, take it back to factory and put in the latest update. So it skipped over those others. And now the machine's running. But it was so great in that I only had to install a few programs back onto it that I use for my ham radios. Otherwise, the rest of the browser and everything else, I just downloaded Chrome, logged into my different email accounts. Everything's there.
Yep.
My tabs, my bookmarks, all my old emails and everything else. And it's like, okay, I'm done.
You're done. It's that easy.
Yeah.
And that's the beauty of doing it that way. And that's why, as we were saying, to add, if you're going to a Chromebook and you're already using something like Google Docs and Google Gmail and like that, all your mail stays up there. Oh, no, thank you. No, thank you. Can I just say no thank you? My Google Assistant tried to start up because I
said you said the magic word?
You said the G word too many times.
Yeah, exactly. As long as those are the programs you're using, you can access them on any computer. In fact, you can also access them on your phone and your tablet. I have looked at, I certainly don't want to write on my phone, but I have looked at Google Docs. I have looked at Google Spreadsheets. I have looked at Google Presentations on my phone. You can access them there as easily as anywhere else.
Yeah, especially all your photos. You know, you want to pull up a photo and Google search on it. You know, you're all set. You can sit there and, you know, put the search in that I'm looking for cars. And all the pictures that I might have taken with cars in it will show up there.
That's exactly right.
And they're there on the phone. It's like, oh.
All right, we're done for another week. We've got 40 votes in the poll. Please vote in the poll. Please vote in the poll. We're done for another week. I want to thank Dave Enright. I want to thank Steve Ray. I'm Nick Francesco. I want to thank everybody who called in. Those of you who called in so late, I'm sorry. Please call in earlier. And we would rather have you call in than text because often that we need clarifying questions, and that just gets difficult because Dave's doing 60 things at once over there, including the text message. Only 60. But be good to one another. We'll be back next week with a whole lot more of the longest-running computer show in the known universe, Sound Bites, right here on member-supported Jazz 90.1. We'll see you in 166 hours. Be good to one another, will you?